Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 4:18 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is August 18th. I thought I'd kick off with Bed Bath and Beyond. So we've got over a decade of history here, and the price peaked back in 2013 and then trended downwards and looked increasingly likely that it was going to go bust. But then, of course, we had the meme phenomenon. So since the peak in the meme mania back in early 2021, we can, I think, draw one simple conclusion that the meme investor is seeing diminishing returns from their crowdfunding regime. And Bed Bath & Beyond was down over a third in here today. So we're at the point now where these types of completely contradictory arguments can't be sustained any longer, and the ability to continue to fool most of the people most of the time isn't something that is going to be possible indefinitely. So some of the impetus is certainly coming out of these stocks. We've seen, for example, Bed Bath and Beyond coming off really heavily. Then GameStop is also down rather heavily in here today as well. It looks like it's failing to sustain the move above the $40 level. One thing I think is interesting is that they have about $1 billion in cash, but they're losing about $777 billion a year, which would suggest that by this time next year the company will be bust. And that is, of course, assuming that they fail to sell additional shares to indulgent retail investors. Now, when we try to put that in perspective, I think the meme phenomenon alone helps to really emphasize just how much money has been floating around. So the fact that these companies can still attract interest and that they can move by hundreds of percent in a short period of time, then that tells us that we're still in a very liquidity-rich environment. And then we can think about the recovery we've seen in the cryptocurrency markets. So Bitcoin is back now testing the region of the sequence of higher reaction lows once more. So it's at the ideal area where, if it's going to find support, then this should pretty much be the area that that happens. But then let's think about financial conditions more generally. So, financial conditions have lots of different inputs. There's some of them are fixed income, some of them money market, and some of them about the stock market. So, financial conditions were tightening, and then they've eased up somewhat recently. Now let's just look at lots of back history. And we can see that there have been significant occasions where financial conditions have got really tight. So that was particularly true in 2002, 2008, 2011, and 2020. And now prices are starting to come back up again. But it's important also to update the chart. So let's bring it up to where we are right now. And there's certainly been an easing of financial conditions over the course of the last 6 weeks. We've had a really quite impressive rebound in stock markets. There has been obviously a lot of argument about whether this is the low we've seen in June or whether it's a low. And the S&P 500 has broken the sequence of lower rally highs. It's pushed back up and through the overhead trading range. And it's above the 200-day moving average, and that moving average has turned upwards. So then investors are going to be thinking, well, golly, this must be the bottom. And it might be. But the bigger question then is, why was the Federal Reserve raising interest rates in the first place? Well, it was because they're worried about inflation. So inflation might be peaking right now. And that's, I think, one of the primary arguments for thinking that is because of the lagged effect of the peak in money supply growth. And that was about 18 months ago. So that certainly supports the argument that inflation may be peaking, but it doesn't suggest that it's going to come straight back down. So that's another question. And then we have the inverted yield curve. So this is the most reliable lead indicator we have for recessions. So it has come up in here today, up 7 basis points, back to a negative 31.5 now, having been at negative 40 at the end of last week. So we're still in negative territory, and the time to be exceptionally cautious about stocks is when the yield curve spread moves back above zero. But then let's look at other kinds of yield curve. So this is the high yield bond yield curve. So it doesn't have the same record of inversions, and in 2020 it didn't become inverted. But certainly there's a downtrend there, and it doesn't look like it's over yet either. So we have an inverted, or we have a tightening environment in the high yield market. And then let's look at the muni bond equivalent of the yield curve. And we've seen a meaningful contraction. So we're back now in the region of the lows from back in 2019 and 2020, and it is still going down. So we're seeing lots of different types of yield curve moving progressively closer to inversion. So we're not quite there yet, but usually by the time a recession starts in earnest, then every kind of yield curve will be inverted. So investors are still willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the most benign Goldilocks scenario, which is that inflation is going to come back down, it will basically evaporate, and corporate profits will be left unscathed and will start increasing once more. And then interest rates will easily be able to come back down, and we will see a resumption of this already very impressive bull market that's been underway since late 2008 and early 2009. And some of the kinds of indicator that would contribute to thinking that this is a medium-term low have fired. So the percentage of stocks that are trading above their 200-day moving average is now up to about 40%, and it was less than 20% only 6 weeks ago. And every time it gets back below 20% and we have an oversold condition, then we tend to get rebounds. And those rebounds generally go to about 60%. So it might be premature to think that this rebound has ended just yet. But there's a good number of companies that are in the region of their moving average. So this index can move quite quickly. And then, of course, we have the advanced decline line. So, when we think about the performance, for example, of the S&P 500, then we just simply take the number of shares that are advancing versus those that are declining and add them together. And it's actually broken out. So it's been going sideways and then it popped on the upside. So this has been a very broad-based recovery for the S&P 500. And it certainly supports the view that the low could be in. But then it does also beg the question, what happens if interest rates continue to rise? What happens if inflation doesn't come back down? And These are, I think, very important questions because the 10-year yield is still hovering here around the 3% level. And it was off the lows in here today and still continuing to rebound following the upside Q reversal at the beginning of this month. So until we see a clear break in that short-term sequence of higher reaction lows and in a dynamic manner, then we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. So bond investors are still willing to give the benefit of the doubt to higher interest rates on aggregate. And I do think that we're on the pivot point of whether we move into a deep recession or a shallow recession. And a lot of it is going to hinge on how eager the Federal Reserve is to kill off inflation now. If they withdraw from tightening liquidity now, then that's going to, I think, sow the seeds for long-term inflation. If they're willing to take measures to significantly withdraw liquidity now, then they may successfully kill off the inflationary trend. And how eager they are to raise interest rates through the balance of this year will probably be the deciding factor. So, bond yields pushing higher implies there will be higher interest rates. And we haven't yet seen a big move in unemployment, but it does look like it's coming. We see surveys from PwC that about half of companies are talking about cutting workforce. So that's a certainly a missing ingredient in the inflation question. And I do want to go back and look at this S&P 500 because we've seen a really phenomenal advance. And let's just remind ourselves that the index doubled in the space of about 18 months. And then let's just go back and look at the period from the 18 months up to the peak. And the index went up 68%. So even before that peak, it hadn't accelerated, but it had done really spectacularly well in the 18 months ahead of that peak. And we had a big shock and liquidity infusion in 1998 with the long-term capital management. And then interest rates were held down for longer because of fears about Y2K. And then interest rates started going up again in 1999 because of irrational exuberance. And then they just kept going. And eventually the market started to roll over. Then we had 9/11. And then the market didn't bottom again for 2 years. So we're at, I think, a critical juncture now because the market went up so fast in such a short period of time. And if we think about the VIX index, it's still reasonably elevated. And the difference in price between calls and puts is still very exaggerated, but it hasn't yet popped on the upside. And there's still the sequence of lower rally highs. So until it breaks that sequence of lower rally highs, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside, even when there's such a wide premium between calls and puts. Then let's think about the dollar. The dollar continues to suggest that there's going to be an interest rate differential in favor of the USA. So that supports the interest rate hiking environment. This remains really quite a consistent uptrend and a very impressive breakout from an exceptionally prolonged range. So it continues to put downward pressure on gold, and gold prices are still pulling back and not in a dynamic manner any longer, but certainly not able to sustain a rebound until the dollar rolls over. And I think that the most important data point for the dollar is going to be unemployment. As long as unemployment is very low and we have a record number of people working, the Federal Reserve is going to continue to raise rates. And that's going to put upward pressure on the dollar, downward pressure on gold. So it's unemployment is going to be the, I think, the pivotal event. And we're just not there yet, even though there is potential. Then let's think about copper. Copper prices were a little bit steadier in here today, but and this is still a reasonably consistent rebound, but we've had a meaningful pullback and a deep oversold condition. So we're unwinding the oversold condition. And this is where we're going to have a big signal, I think, for the health of the Chinese economy. So China's by far the largest consumer and processor of copper. And if China's economy continues to slow down, it will manifest itself in the form of a weaker copper price. But then you have renewable energy, and it's very copper intense. So it's a new source of demand. It's helping to moderate the downward pressure on the copper price. The one thing, though, is that I see continued claims that the world's going to run out of the ability to supply copper. And this is very similar to the kinds of arguments we had before 2008. The world was going to run out of food. And then fertilizer prices went absolutely stratospheric, and people were very much of the opinion that it didn't matter what the price of the fertilizers was, because farmers would have to pay it. But that was pretty much ignoring the fact that farmers don't have infinite resources, and they simply changed their crop cycles. And then the credit crisis sucked all the leverage out of the system. Then we had the phenomenal. I'll never forget that I said when my second daughter was born that I wouldn't buy BHP for her, and I got these really snotty emails and telling me that I wasn't really a commodity bull and I was being disingenuous. But and then I got one that said, well, didn't I realize that it was better value now than when it had been a third of the price? So I kind of put these estimates that the world's going to be short of copper in 6 years' time. I take them with a grain of salt, because the simple fact of the matter is that if there is less copper, then less will be built. And if the price of copper were to go up a lot, then we're going to have substitution, and it'll just simply be uneconomic to build. So then you're going to get this to and fro between supply and demand. And we've had a very meaningful breakdown. So this still looks like a short covering rally, and it's not going up especially quickly, but it would have to push back above the $4 level to really signal a return to demand dominance. And oil prices were steadier in here today, so some of the inventories were lower. And there's not quite as much speculation today about Iran being allowed back into the global market for oil. The price has broken down, but it's not following through on the downside. And the longer higher prices are sustained for, the more sustainable the inflation argument is going to be. So I don't feel comfortable being a bearish analyst. I've long been more of an optimist. And I've always been most comfortable when I'm the only optimist in the room. But I feel like I'm the only pessimist in the room at present. And everyone has suddenly turned around and concluded that the pullback is over and that we're going to be at new highs before Christmas. I've been thinking a lot about companies like Apple. Apple trades on a price to sales ratio of 7, and that's expensive. Now, they have tons of cash and they continue to have products that people want, and they're trying to create a luxury brand image for the company. But it's overbought in the short term, it's an expensive stock, and unemployment rates haven't even begun to rise yet. So that's in the future, and we're still in an environment where financial conditions have loosened up, and we've had significant rebounds in asset prices. And that is only going to further encourage the Federal Reserve to raise rates. So the market's pricing in 50 basis points in September. It's quite likely that that's going to be the case. I have a feeling that we've had a strong rebound over the last 7 weeks because investors are pricing in that the Fed will pivot at the Jackson Hole conference this month. I do think there's a strong potential that that's going to be a sell the rumor, or I guess it's really a buy the rumor and sell the news phenomenon, and that prices will start to come back down subsequently. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.